It's very nice to welcome back an old friend to the program this morning. Longtime lobbyist for the Retail Council of New York State, Ted Patricus, is here to tell us about his new book, Lobbying 101. The subtitle, What Is It Exactly That You Do? That is about his experiences as a lobbyist in Albany. The book takes the reader through a three-decade career as a lobbyist in New York State to show why, despite its bad rap, the practice is indeed a critical component of sound public policy. And again, the name of the book is Lobbying 101, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Ted Patricus to the roundtable this morning. How are you, sir?
Oh, Joe, I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
It's really nice to have you on the program. I was talking to Libby Post, who we'll get to in a moment, because she features in your book. But
yes, she does.
I think we were talking about my early days. When did you start at the Retail Council? What year?
In February of 1989.
Okay, so I was a very young reporter, and not even here yet, but I was in working in commercial radio, and I just always had very fond memories of calling you, and you were very helpful. You were very
well. Thank you.
Not all people were, Ted.
Well, you know, I got my professional start as a reporter for a community newspaper in suburban Rochester. And, you know, I'm one of those guys, I still get nervous when I have to call and order a pizza or something like that.
Oh, I know.
So,
yeah,
you know, I would call sources and I'd be like, I'm sorry to bother you. And I thought, you know what, if I'm ever on the other side, I'm never, ever going to do that. And, yeah, and I didn't, and it was, I always enjoyed talking about stuff, and I think I mentioned this in the book. Sometimes some of those Christmas statistics that you call me for, well, you know, they were, well, I don't want to say they were specific, but they were sort of random. So,
well, they were the best you had at the moment, right? I mean, it's
exactly right.
Look, we were grasping at straws, and if you had a toothpick sized straw, we were going to grasp it because we needed something to fill the airwaves.
I am glad to be remembered for that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So give us a sense of what brought you into, do you say, I'm going to be a lobbyist? Or do you say, oh, I'm going to work at the Retail Council, and this brought me into doing that type of work?
It was definitely the latter. You know, I had worked for a couple of years for the state Senate for Senator James Donovan from Utica. And I loved it. You know, they tell you if you get the legislature injected into your veins at a young age, it doesn't leave. But it was kind of a grind. It was late nights. It was a lot of work. Wasn't a lot of money. I saw a blind box ad for an organization looking for a newsletter editor. And I thought, I can do that. And it was the Retail Council. And I spent the first couple of years doing that. I was the go-to person for the press. I did the newsletter. But I also tagged along with my boss, Jim Sharon, down to the legislature, and I started to get a sense. And the next thing I knew, I was lobbying. And I kind of fell backwards into it, but it makes a lot of sense now that I look back on it.
What makes sense to you?
That's where it would go.
Yeah.
You know, to your question, and one of the points that I make in this book is that you really don't just wake up one day and decide, well, I'm going to be a lobbyist. Something takes you there. Either you're motivated by an issue and you want to get in there and be a part of the process to get your issue through, or you just sort of, it's like osmosis. Suddenly, you know, you become conversant in an issue. The first real issue area that I worked with the state legislature through the Retail Council were labor issues. I don't think Jim wanted to do them, and they were becoming more prevalent in the early 90s. My bosses knew that I had some experience with the legislature. I knew a lot of people. I just started sort of hanging around and picking up on the lingo, picking up on the process that I had a little basis in. And soon I was the one carrying the folders down to the Capitol to talk with this senator, this member of the assembly, on different labor issues. I think the first two that I worked on were the changing of the child labor laws, because those were important to the retail industry, and minimum wage, which lived with me for 30 more years with the Retail Council. It just seemed to keep coming back. So, you know, you start to build not just a portfolio of issues, but you're seen down in the Capitol, and people think, well, who is this guy? Well, this guy is the guy with the Retail Council. Okay, let's talk with him. And, you know, time went on. Jim Quaremba, who hired me, retired. Jim Sharon took over. When he took over as CEO, I took his place as the director of government affairs. And one thing led to another, and boom, I was a lobbyist. And I never, ever thought, when I was in college for communication journalism and political science, that it would take me to that place.
Ted Patrikas is our guest. His new book is Lobbying 101. What is it exactly that you do? I love the subtitle, because I'm sure it's a question that you've been asked a billion times, but it does bring us to the main point of what a lobbyist does. And I'm also going to wind this into what I read in the introduction of this is a profession that often gets a bad rap of the big bad lobbyists of what role in a perfect world, when all is right and still, of what lobbying does, that is the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah. And in a perfect world, the way it's supposed to work is that it's collaborative. I think it's understanding. Sometimes it can be a little bit difficult. You can get into some arguments. You can get into some debates. And I'm sure, you know, but that's where good public policy comes through. A couple of my pet peeves as I worked my way through my career, it was lobbyists who would not talk to the other side. I never understood that. It's like, wait a minute. Why don't you find out what's pushing their agenda so you can either respond to it or just say, hey, we can't really work with you on this one. I just didn't see it as that adversarial a process. The other one was would be the lawmakers who would say, well, I'm not going to meet with lobbyists. And this is where I think that's a huge mistake, because think of the number of bills just in New York alone that get introduced over the course of a year, thousands of them. One lawmaker cannot be an expert in every one of them, and they may have to vote on that bill. I think good lobbying means you go in and you present your case. Two of my favorite legislators were the two that made me work the hardest. One was the late Richard Brodsky. I would get so nervous when I had a meeting with him, because he made you work. He kept you on your toes. Great guy. And then Assemblywoman Deborah Glick. I met with her one time, and I made the case, and she just looked at me and she said, no. And I thought, whoa, wait a minute, no. And then she said, this is where you do your work, and you try to get me to yes. And boy, I thought that was fantastic. I thought that was the essence of how lawmaking should work in that perfect world where everything is still. She gave me a chance to do my job, and it was to present the facts as I knew them. And I think when you do that, when you make it fact-based, when you're able to go in there honestly, then lobbying helps take a raw idea and refine it to the point where you get from that raw idea to something that actually in the real world is going to work. And that's what I tried to do. It didn't make me the most popular guy from time to time, but I slept pretty well at night.
Well, that's the thing. If you sleep well at night, assuming, you know, that comes with being a good person, which I if you're not, I don't know about it. It's just interesting to me, because if people do have a bad rap, it's also, I mean, the other part of this equation is the legislator and how they relate and react to you. So to a lobbyist in general. So, I mean, that's part of the equation. So it's sort of what the two of you cook up together that really is, I guess, what you're ultimately judged upon.
I that is a great point. You know, and as you're talking about that and the way that you just put it, I'm reminded of another legislator who I worked with. He was the chair of the Consumer Protection Committee for the state Senate for a number of years. And so many retail council bills, related bills, went through his committee. Senator Chuck Fraschillo from Long Island, working with him was kind of a professional turning point in my relationship with the legislature. He would put bills in that the members of the retail council would just go nuts. You cannot do this. Things on like gift card expiration dates. And because his bill was the one that removed them. And at the time, retailers were apoplectic. And it was kind of like a Monty Python movie, you know, where they say, are there any women here? And they go, no. And we can't do it. We can't do it. And I called them one day and I said, we had a big conference call with the members. They said, really, you can't do this? And everybody was quiet. They could do it. And Senator Fraschillo, what Chuck said to me, he said, look, I just want to get something done. I want to make this better. And I thought, wow, cool. You just want to get something done. I can work with you. And we worked very well together throughout his career as a senator. And it wasn't always something that the retail industry wanted. But we figured out a way to get to yes, because that's what was good ultimately for the consumers. And if the retailers are not doing things that are good for the consumers, well, then we lose shoppers. So there's always an end. And, you know, the relationships that you build are super important. And, you know, when they're based on facts, when they're based on mutual respect, the legislature understands what the lobbyist has to do. The lobbyist understands what the legislator has to do, which is based on getting reelected every 2 years. I think that's a good basis for a good relationship.
Are the lion's share of the legislators that you worked with, do you think their heart's in the right place, that they're doing the job that they were sent
yes.
by their constituents to do?
Yes, I do. You know, I can think of, you know, very few times in the 30 plus years that I was in there that I had a real issue with a legislator. You know, again, there would be bills that we just went to the mat to try to stop and would succeed. But it was on the merits, and it was not on some fundamental disagreement or personal enmity toward one legislator or another. You know, I think that when people get into the legislature, two things happen. I think they're overwhelmed by the vast number of issues that you have to deal with. When I first went to the retail council, I thought, how hard can this be? Sales tax, maybe a couple consumer issues. Oh my gosh, you know, the retail industry covers the gamut of issues. And I think the other thing that happens to lawmakers is, you know, they find their sweet spots. They find their specialty areas. They may chair that committee or be on that committee, and they become specialists. But they're still there to do the right thing so that they can get reelected every 2 years. I think pretty highly of elected officials, and I enjoyed working with them.
But certainly part of it is what you are, quote unquote, selling as well. Let's
yeah.
get to our mutual friend, Libby Post.
Yes.
Who is quoted in the book of saying the last bastion of bipartisanship is puppies and kittens, which is what she is what she lobbies for. You're lobbying
right.
for the retail council and the state of, you know, and businesses within the state of New York. I would think that any legislator worth their hide is going to be interested in how retail sales and jobs are affected within, you know, affect the people in their respective districts. And the same with Libby. I mean, Libby is a great example of someone that you're going in and it's and as you say, you think it's a no-brainer, but there's obviously a lot more to it. And there's a lot of work to be done. But I assume that just by the subject, it's going to open up more doors than if you were doing something, for want of a better term, more sinister.
A great way to put all that, Joe. And, you know, you mentioned Libby and she and another lobbyist, Evan Stavisky from Parkside Group. I feature both of them, or each of them, in the book on their own, because they're two lobbyists for whom I have a great deal of respect. And when we're talking about Libby, here's somebody who can take an issue that's emotional, dogs, cats, puppies, kittens, and bring it right into the reality. She doesn't lean into the emotion of it. It becomes a part of the argument, but the way that she does it, she's very tactical, and she has a very healthy respect for the process, which is what I think separates good lobbyists from bad. There are some lobbyists out there, they're in it for the fame, the wealth, and fame within a very, very small radius around the city of Albany. You know, they're big shots in the town, but, you know, get out of town and who cares? But as far as the issues go, you know, when you're talking about retail, there are a couple of brands out there that are real flashpoints for some legislators. You represent those guys? Not talking to you. No way. They have a bad reputation in the world, or there's maybe some lawmakers who just don't like that particular retailer, and they'll say, I don't care. Or when you're talking about certain issues, you have to be very, very careful to not alienate lawmakers' entire conferences in the state legislature, because you could be talking about a sensitive issue that affects the retail industry, but you really need to toe the line pretty carefully. Let's go to minimum wage for an example. Yep, the retail industry is known for paying the minimum wage. The Retail Council ended up backing the fight for 15 when Governor Cuomo came and asked us to do that. It was the most anomalous thing. Nobody could figure it out, but we went in there to do it because you've got to think about the reputation of the clients that you're serving. And reputation sometimes is much bigger than the position that one takes on an issue. And I got very protective of the retail industry's public reputation so that we could talk about some of those issues in a more dispassionate way, the way that Libby and Evan and other lobbyists whom I respect are able to do with some big, big topic issues.
So employers, retailers are then going to go to their constituents, and or the retailers are going to go to their representatives and say, hey, look, we can't afford to pay $15 an hour. We're barely staying afloat now, and if we have to pay that, we're going to go out. That is of great concern. So that becomes an issue. But then there's, you know, there's the fairness issue, and oh right, somebody has to live off this as well.
Yeah.
I mean, this is being replicated all across the country, this argument, and it's a great example of something that, you know, it seems like, well, if we can do it, great, but if we can't, I mean, these are the reasons why, and why it's so tough, I would think, to come to an agreement.
Well, and it is. That's a very fair way of looking at it. But here's, if you go back to the, let's stay on the minimum wage thing for a minute. You go back to when that became the big rallying cry, the fight for 15. That was going to happen anyway. To me, you know, there are very few things that are inevitable in a state legislature, but that was going to happen. And I figured we could either be on the train or get run over by it. We were on the train. The governor let us in. We had good conversations. That's why the upstate track to 15 was much slower than the downstate track. The governor and the legislature recognized the difference between the different economies and allowed for that. That's that get to yes thing. That's that, okay, how are we going to do this in a way that doesn't put hundreds of businesses out of business? The other thing that I tried to stay away from, and I mentioned this in the book, is the over-reliance on cliches that lobbyists tend to fall into. And if you walk around year after year after year after year, and your fundamental argument is, if you do this, then businesses in New York State are going to leave. Nobody hears it anymore. It's just background noise. You've
right.
got to come up with something other than the box of cliches that you've been relying on for the past 20 years. Don't do it. Come up with something new that's based on today. And the result, I think, is better in the end.
So I'm not saying this is the case, and I'm not arguing. God knows I'm not arguing against a minimum $15 minimum wage. But what I am going to ask you is, so if the retailers are telling you that they can't deal with it, that's a different argument, right? I mean, then it isn't a cliche. It's truth that they're dealing with.
Right. It is. It's truth that they're dealing with. And that's when, you know, sometimes I felt like the dad who had to say, son, I've got some bad news for you. the email that I would send out to our members was, folks, this is reality. This is what's going to happen. How can we make this so it doesn't kill you? And throughout that conversation, it was very, very interesting. Because the Retail Council, as you know, represents to this day stores ranging from the largest brands right down to the Main Street mom and pops.
Right.
By and large, the Main Street stores that I was talking to, and there were hundreds of them at that point on this issue, none of them were opposed to the $15 idea. It's like, yeah, we're having trouble keeping people at $10 an hour, $12 an hour. We're already doing that. So it became, how do you build this bridge? And, you know, I guess that's a good analog for other issues. It's how do you get from this raw idea, I need $15 an hour minimum wage, to, okay, this is how it can work. It's not as easy as flipping that switch that the press release might have called for. Fight for 15. Yeah, we're going to get $15 today. Okay. We're not going to oppose you on the concept. So can you work with us to get there? And the answer from all sides back then was yes. And, you know, I think I lost a few friends along the way, but it wasn't about me. It was about getting right to this issue in a way that made sense for the retailers whom I had the pleasure to represent.
Well, Ted Patricus, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Ted is the author of the new book, Lobbying 101, What Is It Exactly That You Do? And it's a terrific look at lobbying, especially for anyone who is interested in government and especially New York State government. Ted, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. It's always a delight to speak with you, and I thank you so much for being with us on this Monday morning.
Joe, thank you for having me, and enjoy the weather out there. It's even cold here in Tucson.
Is it really? Oh, well, all right.
It's 30 degrees, and there's snow on the mountains, so there you go.
There you go. Hunker down, Ted. Ted Patricus, thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Thanks, Joe.